We switch gears now a little bit from Ernie Cline talking about virtual reality in the future. Susan Demeter has written a book called Cosmic Witch, Magic, Witchcraft, and the Supernatural, looking at traditions, myths, magic, sexuality, supernatural empowerment of being a witch in the modern world. She lives in Italy right now and has written a book that sort of gives a big picture about witchcraft through the centuries and what it is now for men and women who take it seriously, and argues that it is consistent with what we understand as science. And when we come back, Susan will be joining us here to talk about witchcraft. Welcome back. You know, most of us, at least from my generation, our first exposure to witches is probably the movie The Wizard of Oz. And later came the hit TV series Bewitched with Samantha and her mom. Long before those kind of depictions from the world of entertainment, the subject of witches was taken in a much more serious vein. The term witch hunt summarizes that part of the story. Witches were scorned and hunted and burned and shunned and seen as allies of the devil, demonic. Susan Demeter wants to change that narrative and has written a far-reaching book about witches and witchcraft called Cosmic Witch, Magic, Witchcraft, and the Supernatural, and she joins us now. Susan, welcome.
Ah, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. It's actually
a
big honor.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. We have mutual friends, of course, Greg Bishop, who's recommended your book to me, and I thank him for it because it's really interesting. I learned so much that I didn't know about witches and witchcraft. Let's start with you, though. You share with us some very personal experiences you had as a youngster that sort of set you on this path. And the experiences are not what we would normally associate with witches, what we know of witches, but you paint a very broad picture of a range of phenomena that you believe are interrelated. Start the story.
Okay. It really starts as with me as a small child, and having experiences with, I can't say it any simpler than just, they were like little men, okay? These little beings that at the time, because I was a child and probably because my only real exposure to the supernatural was maybe Scooby-Doo, I felt that these beings were ghosts. I've since, as I've grown up and evolved my thinking, don't view them as little ghosts anymore. I think they're something else. But really, it was these sort of experiences in childhood that sort of opened the door for me, I guess, to accept the other realm, the supernatural, and that there are things within our reality that are really left to be explained. And that, from that, I think, evolved my view towards magical thinking and to who I am today. I don't know if you want me to explain a little bit deeper about these beings.
Yeah. Please do.
Okay. The first sort of memory I have was sort of, it's almost dreamlike, hazy-like memory of hiding behind this sort of large curtain that we had in the living room. And I grew up in Toronto, Canada, in the suburbs there, and we had like a large sort of typical 1960s, 1970s home with a large bay window. And I remember I would go hide in there with my stuffed toys, and I would sort of go into these almost shamanic trips, is what I would call them now, with this little being, and we would go on these flights of fancy and sort of speak in a language and a telepathy that was really foreign to me, okay? From that, and later on as an adult, I had to wonder, like, is this just my imagination? Was this an imaginary friend? But experiences that went beyond that, sort of convinced me a little bit otherwise, that maybe there was more to this than just an imaginary friend, because at that time I was an only child and, you know, then later on, a couple of years later, I was a little older, and I saw the first being, which was in a house that my parents were looking to buy because my mother at the time was having my sister, so they wanted to expand their space. So we went to this house. It was a new build, and I remember being a little kid and being enthusiastic and running around and thinking, oh, this place is so wonderful, and where am I going to pick out my bedroom? And there was a room there, and I'll never forget it because it had skylights. And as a kid, I'd never seen that before, and I thought, oh, wow, this is so cool. Like, I can look at the night sky through the window. I want this to be my bedroom kind of thing. And as I was in this room, I turned around, and there was this little man. And he was as solid as, say, any other person that, you know, you would see walking down the street. He looked like a salt, like he was there. But it shocked me so much. And in my child's mind, I already knew this being, this person that's there, shouldn't be there. This is not right. There's something really wrong here. And it shocked me to such a degree that I didn't want to be in that house anymore. It started to frighten me. After that, there were other experiences with these sort of little beings, and they were beginning to frighten me to such a degree that I would have like a wolf protector that would come. I didn't have a dog at the time, but it was a wolf that appeared to me, again, very solid, very gentle, and very protective of me, and sort of keeping these little beings away from me. Now, as a teenager, okay, and as a younger adult, I started getting really into psychology and that, and I sort of came to the conclusion I was the wolf, that I was so frightened as a child by whatever was going on around me that I created this wolf to protect me. And that's where it kind of stood until I was about 23 years old, and I saw a UFO with my then brother-in-law. And being an adult and having a fairly close range experience with a UFO over a nuclear power plant in Ontario, that it kind of shocked me into thinking, wait a second here, this is something weird, I can't explain it. And then it made me look back upon all these strange experiences that I had as a child and start putting more stock into them as more of a real experience than, say, imagination or childhood fears or, you know what I'm saying? Like it set the trend at that age. And within the book, I discuss sort of how all of these experiences, particularly the UFO ones, there was a synchronicity to them. They shaped the way I was thinking. And every time I tried to turn away from the UFO topic, it sort of pulled me back in. And because of these experiences, I felt I was far more open to the idea of the supernatural. And it sort of gave me that impetus to sort of look at, like I said, another realm, a different way of being. And therefore, I sort of view those experiences as shaping who I am as a cosmic witch. But it was several years after all of these experiences that I finally was able to have, like, the bravery to come forward and say, you know what, I'm a witch.
So, do you remember the day that happened?
There was an evolution to it, and I knew it in my heart, and I knew it in my mind. But the exact moment where I became comfortable enough to start saying, yeah, I'm a witch, actually happened. I was very fortunate several years ago to have a sort of a luncheon meeting with a fellow by the name of Dr. Adam Crabtree. And he is one of the original members of the Esalen. I think Dr. Jeffrey Kripal, who some of your audience might know, yeah, wrote about him in a book called Authors of the Impossible. And he had, Dr. Crabtree had all these sort of synchronistic experiences surrounding Bobby Kennedy's murder. And I was very fortunate that I was able to meet with this person who was in private practice at the time in Toronto. And I was talking to him about all these sort of experiments that I was doing at the time, and I was framing them in very scientific language because, you know, I'm with this person who I admire and they're a scholar and I don't want them to think I'm a crazy person. So I was talking about these experiments with sort of conjuring and creating synchronicity and UFOs. And he turned around to me and he said, you know, 500 years ago, you would have been burned at the stake. You're a witch. And it just sort of floored me that he sort of came out with that. And I really started thinking and saying, yeah, all these things I'm doing, well, they are witchcraft. And if I reframe them in different language, then certainly they're witch. These are rituals. These are ceremonies. And at that point, I thought, you know, if this wonderful person who I admire so much as a scholar is saying you're a witch and he's comfortable with this, then you know what? I should be comfortable with it too. So at that point, I thought, you know what? I'm just going to start identifying this way. And it was that day, I think, that just, because being a UFO scholar is one thing. And even when I was like, I was working sort of in corporate America and people sort of knew I had these sort of fringy sort of interests in researching UFOs, you can always sort of wrap that up in skeptical language. And, oh, you know, well, yeah, but 99% of them can be resolved or whatever. So you don't necessarily put yourself out there as someone that other people might think is crazy.
Yeah.
But with the term witch, like you said, you know, there's witch hunt, there's all these things, there's these negative connotations of Satanism, and I don't have problems with Satanists, but, I mean, honestly, like, it's not the same with Wicca, with other types of witchcraft, it's completely different.
And well, let's get into some definitions, because
a negative connotation.
Yeah, let's get into some definitions. You kind of are talking about witchcraft, a big tent witchcraft. So when you have these experiences you've just described, seeing these beings, these little men, mm-hmm. and then you're born during a UFO wave, and you have some UFO experiences yourself, all of those things fitting under the tent of witchcraft is not something that most people this conclusion that most people would reach. But you have very broad definitions that those experiences you had as a youngster opened you up to a much more complicated, wider world, right?
Yes. So, I mean, I think that those were in preparation for sort of my thinking and even how I now explore, like, the UFO subject, which is far more using, like, the lenses of a witch, very right brain-oriented, that without those experiences, I would have never come to these conclusions. As well, like in the book, I talk about shamanic witches of centuries past, particularly in Italy, that, you know, their experiences are very similar with the supernatural, okay? So for me, this is sort of why I feel comfortable. It's not just this the typical, I guess, archetype of the witch or how a witch should behave. I'm talking more about magic in the realm of how Dr. Radin describes it in his book, Real Magic, as something that is potentially scientifically viable. And for me, witchcraft is not so much a religion, but a lifestyle, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, I think it does. Are you in Italy right now? Are we talking to you from Italy?
Yes, you are.
I've never spoken to a witch live from Italy before. And how are the Italians with this? I mean, do you have witch on your business card? Do you tell people there? I think you mentioned an incident in the book, but do you generally tell people that you're a witch?
It's not the first thing that comes up when I meet people. Hi, you know, I'm a witch. So it would be like, you know, someone coming up and saying, hi, I'm a Catholic or whatever. It's not the way you kind of meet people. But when I do meet people, I'm quite open about it. I wear my pentagram as a necklace, like as a pendant. I openly do that. In Italy, it's actually surprisingly far more, I think, accepted than one might believe, considering we are a Catholic country here. So I haven't had any real problems with that. There's also a very lively communities of witches throughout Italy, and pagans, like it is a movement here. So, you know, I haven't had too many problems, like, you know, with people judging, at least not openly.
So give me a definition of witchcraft, what you mean by it, and who qualifies as a witch, because you describe a whole range of different kinds, different types.
Well, the thing is like in the book, and I sort of give you a bit of a smorgasbord of different types of witches and different ways witchcraft can be defined. And I think it really, depending upon who you ask, you're going to get different answers. I think that in general, if you look at the witch archetype, it is a powerful woman that can either be, you know, very sexy, a seductress. She can be the crone at the end of the village, sort of doing magical things and making ointments and herbs and protecting her village. She can be a priestess to the goddess. There's many different definitions. And yes, men are witches too, but I do mention in the book that following the archetype of what a witch is, there is this sort of divine feminine energy that I think that males who identify as witches really are channeling that. They're channeling that strong, powerful sort of archetype of the witch. So it really depends, like, on who you ask. But to me, anybody that sort of wants to be a witch, you feel it or you know it in your heart, depending upon, you know, and how you, the path you want to follow. There are many paths that can be followed and created, and, you know, and I think that's one of the beauties sort of being a pagan witch, is you can sort of create your own path. And in my path, that includes UFOs and UFO experience.
Are there witch conventions, like UFO conventions?
There are. Not really, like, in, there are, in Italy, yes. There are in the United States as well. But obviously right now with the whole situation in the world, you know, things are being done more by Zoom and, you know. But there are actual witch conventions, pagan conventions, for sure.
You grew up with parents who were fairly tolerant of this. Your dad was a scientist. Your mom, you describe her as a stay-at-home mom hippie. A hippie stay-at-home mom, and they allowed you to explore these different ideas. It sounds, I can see parents out there saying, that's crazy. They should have cracked down on that girl before she went down this path, and other people saying, let her explore it.
Yeah, no, my parents were both very liberal. So when it came to me and my sister, they were pretty much very open in allowing us to explore what we needed to. And honestly, like, I think I would have had a much harder time as an adult with the UFO topic if it wasn't for my dad, because my dad was a scientist. He worked during the Second World War. He worked for the military, the Canadian military, and worked with the U.S. military as well on identified friend and foe, so the radar, the early radar, as a scientist, as a developer. He had a UFO experience himself. And now, he never told me that until after my experience when I was 23 with the nuclear power plant. And I said, Dad, you know, I know what I'm seeing. It's not a plane. It's not this. And he was like, you know, honey, like, if you say you saw a UFO, you did. And he said, I have to tell you, I saw one as well in the 1950s when I was doing some deep sea fishing in the Gulf of Mexico. And he described a disc-like object, and he said, I have no idea what this was, but I know it wasn't something of ours.
Susan Demeter, we're going to let you pick up that story on the other side, the music telling us we need to take a break. We're talking about the book Cosmic Witch, Magic, Witchcraft, and the Supernatural. We're talking with Susan Demeter about her book Cosmic Witch, Magic, Witchcraft, and the Supernatural. And Susan has told us that witches are not inherently evil or satanic or demonic. So where does that image come from? Is it bad PR, persecution over the centuries, or are there some who might fit that classic mold, the one that we formed in our heads? We'll ask her as soon as we come back here on Coast to Coast AM. Susan, when Greg recommended your book to me, your last name sort of rang a bell from when I was a kid reading Greek and Roman mythology, and I remembered it was the name of a goddess, the goddess of the harvest in Greek lore. She had powers. She was immortal, of course, had powers over climate and weather and the harvest and plants. And then I read in your book that your sister's name is Diana. And I thought, well, I don't know if that's on purpose or not, if your parents were kind of dialed into this. Then later in your book, I read that you had something in mind, a name for your daughter when she was born that would have taken it even a step further, right?
Yeah, my daughter, my eldest daughter, Stephanie, was born on the first day of spring. She was actually 10 days late from her due date, so it's almost like she picked that spot. But as I was in labor and delivery, it dawned on me, I am having a little girl, and she's being born on the first day of spring, and my name is Demeter. So I flirted with the idea of calling her Persephone, but I did change my mind because I thought giving her that double goddess, Persephone and Demeter, it's a powerful name to carry. And with the name Demeter, it's the same thing. As a child, I was almost embarrassed by it because it's an unusual name for North America. People would ask me about it all the time. But then as a teenager and reading Greek mythology, I thought it was really cool. So I came to terms with having that last name Demeter and sort of being sort of a namesake for this goddess, so to speak.
Let's talk about
Diana Demeter. And my sister is a gingery, really like a powerhouse. So yeah, Diana Demeter. I think that my mother sort of, you know, was clued into that.
Let's talk about the PR problem. The PR problem that witches have developed over the centuries. I mean, it didn't start recently. It's been a long time building. Is that religious persecution? And if so, why were witches deemed a threat?
I think in part it was religious persecution, but more towards paganism as Christianity took a hold in Europe. So it was more of a sort of stamping out sort of paganism, which is historically may or may not have been, you know, people who are accused of witchcraft practicing any sort of religious sort of as we would know it today, like modern witchcraft, where we're sort of, or Wiccan or things of that nature. I'm not 100% convinced that any of this survived from ancient times through the centuries. So these people, they tended to be just marginalized people. They might have been a powerful woman who was outspoken, or someone who was very sexual, or somebody who was, you know, maybe the weirdo that, you know, lived down at the end of the village that, you know, when a person's cow got sick or they were having a problem or whatever, they pointed their finger, oh, it must be that person, right? So not necessarily religious sort of persecution, but a persecution about anybody who is not, conforming to the norm, conforming to what we would consider or they would consider an acceptable form of a person within that sort of societies.
And you're out to change that the perception, right?
I am. I mean, I love The Wicked Witch. I mentioned as a pop culture icon, I love her. I adored the Wicked Witch of the West. I was scared of her, but I adored her at the same time. So I don't want to change that, but sort of the idea of now, you know, a person who identifies as a witch, whether it's because they're viewing it from a religious perspective or just they really like the archetype or they find a spiritual sense from that, I think people need to start being more accepting and tolerant with each other just in general, you know, and that should include people who find themselves being more drawn to or following the path of a pagan or a witch or, you know, practicing the old ways. This type of idea of persecuting people because of a belief system, provided it's peaceful, it's got to stop in general, with the witch, yeah.
Are there no bad ones? You describe it, and we'll get into your definition of what qualifies as a witch, but it's generally tolerant and love nature and feel a bond with the earth and natural things.
A witch, we're all human beings, okay? So human beings are complex. So I wouldn't say one singular person is good or bad all the time, but, you know, certainly there are people that are not nice. And, you know, maybe some of those people might be witches, but that could be true of any sort of spiritual path or any sort of self-identification. You know, you have good and bad.
You had said that, you feel that you should be able to follow your own path and decide what witchcraft is to you. Are there boundaries of who falls under the category, though, of what are the basics?
Well, I don't like any kind of boundaries, to be fair, and because witches, it's even witchcraft, it's such a liminal sort of state. There's so much room to play with there is a sort of general, like I said, archetype that I sort of subscribe to myself, which is that sort of the healer at the end of the at the village that is doing her magic and is sort of channeling that divine feminine energy. I call her my star goddess. That I think is there, but it's such a broad thing, and it's so, you know, the word witch and witchcraft can mean different things to different people. So I hate to sort of put rules or boundaries around it.
Well, let's talk about the abilities. So you believe magic is real, and you make a case for it. As you mentioned,
Oh, yes.
Dean Radin, he was here before, and your definition of magic and what kind of abilities are you talking about? How what kind of a range?
Well, I'm talking about what would generally be sort of termed as psychic abilities, being able to gain information non-locally, to be able to sort of game reality, so to speak, so that you might get a preferred outcome to what you want. So it's literally sort of using magical means and tools to gain your will, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, so prayer could be a form of that. People swear by it.
Of course. There have been scientific studies around it that shows that it works.
And the power of positive thinking, you know, creating your own reality in a sense by just dreaming it, thinking it, concentrating on it, making it happen.
Yeah, you can do that. I would caution that it never sort of turns out exactly perhaps the way you want. It's not that simplistic, but at the same time, you can use sort of these methodologies, including prayer, to sort of shift things towards making it more likely the outcome you want, if that makes sense. So this is a magical act, right?
So describe for me the abilities that some witches have. How far does it go? What kinds of things can they do? What kind of things can you do?
As far as my own personal practice and spirituality, or as far
the
experimentation I've done with the paranormal stuff.
Yeah, you have chapters in here about magic, right? The ability to do magical things and make things happen. So what kind of things?
What kind of things can you make happen? It really depends on what you're trying to accomplish and you're trying to do. So I would say, for myself personally, because I hate speaking for other people, but for myself personally, I've been working on conjuration as far as creating UFO experience, or as kind of using it to communicate, using ritual to communicate with what I would consider the phenomena, the light phenomena that I have had experiences with, and gaining information non-locally.
Similar like to summoning. That some people have tried.
Yes.
And it works.
So, yes, it does. Absolutely works. But if it's going to work to such a degree to say where it's acceptable to everyone and all the scientists and all the scientist world, I don't know. I don't think so. But it does work on a personal level for sure.
You described different kinds of witchcraft and magic. Clairvoyance would be one, like seeing what's going to happen, right?
Yeah. So clairvoyance, ESP, precognition, using shamanic techniques to be in contact with the spirit world. All of these things sort of fall under the umbrella of psi, which is, you know, basically it talks about psychokinesis. Using mind over matter, any other type of psychic ability, ESP, and that would fall under the term psi. And psi is something that has been, examined scientifically and in the laboratory, you know, for almost a century. I would say more than a century now, thinking of J.B. Ryan and some of these scientific parapsychologists. And the data is there to support the fact that something is going on. We don't necessarily exactly know what it is from a scientific point of view, But witches don't need that. To be a witch, you don't need to have science validate what you're doing. It's something that is more personal for yourself and your own path and what you're doing for your, you know, for yourself or your coven.
So it works in your personal life. It enhances your personal life.
Yes, I do. I feel at peace. Like to be honest with you, for parts of 2020, because it's been such a tumultuous year for everyone, I sort of let my own spiritual practice go to the wayside, and I was just not feeling it. And then more recently, in the last couple of months, especially after Cosmic Witch came out, and I've been receiving such wonderful feedback on it, I've taken up to my daily sort of practice again. I make offerings to the local spirits. I feel beholden to something that is much greater than myself. And at least on that level, I feel much better. I feel much more positive about my own place in the cosmos now because of that, because of my daily offerings and prayers.
You mentioned the word coven. Do you have a coven?
Personally, no. I have worked, I have done magical workings with other witches. But I am such a sort of eclectic person, and I'm the type of person, I don't do well with rules. I'm a self-practitioner, so I'm doing this on my own.
I was asking about the coven and earlier about conventions, just out of ignorance, mm-hmm. But is there communication between witches?
Oh, of course. There's a lot of communication. It's just like the paranormal world or the UFO world that you're probably more familiar with that. It's the same sort of thing, and you also have the same sort of drama and the same sort of clashing of you know, who thinks that they're more, you know, they've got a better idea of what's going on. So I've always tried to stay on the fringe of the fringe, so to speak. Like, you know, a lot of people that meet me are surprised when I say, you know, show them my body of UFO work, for instance. Well, how come I haven't seen you at conventions? How come I don't know you? And it's because I kind of like to be just quietly doing my own thing. And then when I'm ready to present something, I'll do it. And if people find meaning or value out of it, I'm happy, and that's enough sort of for me. And it's sort of the same in the witch, sort of in the pagan kind of communities. I'm there, but I'm on the fringe.
You mentioned about the psi abilities being sort of central to witches and witchcraft. When you're in the book, you describe a lot of previous orders that relate to witchcraft, the Celts and the Druids and the Brujas and I guess indigenous shaman. I'm thinking about medicine men. So were those traditions, were they using psi to get done what they needed done?
I believe so, yes. I think it's the same sort of mechanisms that, you know, even like I said, just gaining information, like non-locally, like the witches that I've written about, some Italian witches from Friuli that were called the Benendante, which translates to the good folk or the good people. And they would commune with the spirits in a shamanic way to get information about how their crops would go, who might be sick in the village in the coming year, who would pass away. So this is another way of saying they were remote viewing out of time.
You know?
We can put this sort of modern sort of language on it, but it's exactly what they were doing.
I remember reading about witches, midwives who were perceived to be witches, and healers, you know, women and men, I guess, who would know about plants and natural herbs and things that could help for some health issue, became painted as witches. But that goes back as far as humanity, I would think.
Yes. So these people, I would also say cunning folk. Cunning now has a different connotation than maybe it did in the Middle Ages and before, but is the same sort of thing. People that were healers, people that used the natural environment and their skills to heal people, to protect their villages, to protect their crops. All of these things were witchcraft, in my opinion.
Isn't there somewhere, I'm trying to remember in your book, where there's a definition that where the word wisdom comes up, one of the definitions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember where that's from?
It's literally, witchcraft comes from an old English word that literally translates to wild, or not wild, wisdom. Sorry. Wild too. Witches tend to be pretty wild. So, yeah, it does. It's like a wise craft.
You had mentioned something about wolf imagery that was part of you as growing up. And in the book, I remember there's a section about shape-shifting wolf witches. So witches that become wolves and change shapes?
Yes. Now, in my opinion, they were doing this shamanically. But when you do these sort of shamanic trips, you can sort of you can sometimes affect the environment in a physical way outside of your. It's kind of like the UFOs, in my opinion, are somewhat psychic and internal and also external and outward. Same sort of idea. So these witches, it's a long story, but through synchronicity, I found them and it brought me to Bologna. These witches would literally shapeshift into wolves, and they would conduct what is called night battles. And they would fight off what they called melandanti, or bad witches, while protecting their village. And they would do this four times a year around the harvest cycles. And this was all very well documented by a scholar, Carlo Ginzburg, who probably was one of the very first non-Catholic scholars who was able to access Catholic scholarship and all these documents that the church had kept about the Inquisition.
I'll tell you what, Susan, we need to take a short break here. I want to continue that part of the conversation because it's really important. I need to take a break here talking with Susan Demeter about her book, Cosmic Witch, Magic, Witchcraft, and the Supernatural. We'll be right back in a little bit. We'll be opening up the phone lines. You can ask questions about witches and witchcraft as well.